Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
I'm Casey. I'm an alcoholic. I just got blindsided sitting in the front row and having enough time to speak for the 10-minute speaker. But I just took a second to catch my breath. Wow. Very intimidating. So I don't really plan on going into my entire story because I'm only sharing for 10 minutes, but I will kind of share with you what it's like today for me. I have been sober for a little over 4.5 years. I got sober when I was 20, and I see a lot of young people come in, and I just like try to share with them that it's possible and that it's not the end of the world, because that's definitely how I felt. But I've grown so much. I've grown up here, and I've been able to learn a lot about myself and learn a lot about how to live in society and not think I'm the center of it. Mm-hmm. But today, I'll be honest, I don't work a perfect program. I haven't actually been to a meeting in like a week and a half, which I don't recommend because I definitely feel a little wonky, but I know that every day I pray. That's one thing I do every day is I pray, usually in the morning in the shower. That's where me and my sponsor decided I would do it because that's the only place I remember to do it. But it's actually very peaceful, and it kind of just lets me stop for a second and talk to my higher power, as I understand it to be. But I have a new meeting in like a week and a half. Here is kind of, when I come here, it's kind of like a dose of medicine for me. And like I said, since I haven't been to a meeting in a little while, I've been feeling kind of weird. But I know that when I do start to feel weird, I know where I can go to find my medicine. And I know where I can go, and I have tools I can use to feel somewhat content again. Because that's kind of what my life has come to, is just kind of like this level of contentment. There just aren't those super highs and super lows that I used to get on a constant basis. I've come to feel like extremely sane, and that's something I never thought I would have because I was a very kind of manic person when I was out there, even from when I was a little kid. And I definitely get to feel ease and comfort for, you know, my mind, my body, and my spirit every day when I use the tools that this program has come to provide for me. Oh, my mouth just got really dry. This program has given me the opportunity to just like feel acceptance and to kind of let go and let God, whatever. It's such a cliche, but it's true. I get the opportunity every day to turn over what I feel like I can't control, and it drives me crazy, or it used to, but now with the tools I have and the opportunity to pray about it and just sit for a second and like understand that no matter what, I'll be taken care of. It just like relieves my mind, and like I said, my body, like that anxiety isn't there anymore. I don't have to worry and like feel that tense, like anxiety feeling that I'm not going to be taken care of. And I had someone ask me recently, like, do you really feel like you're going to be taken care of? And I could honestly say yes. Like, I go through every day, I'm like, am I, you know, going to find the man of my dreams? Am I going to, you know, be this rock star hairstylist? Am I going to be able to do all these great things that I really want to do? And, like, truth be told, like, I have faith that those things will happen for me, as long as I stay sober. I just have to be super patient about it. And, I mean, it's been proven to me time again that these things kind of come at me when I least expect it, really. I think that's how a lot of people experience that. But, I just pray and, like, you know, for these times that I feel like I don't have everything I want, it's just an opportunity for me to, like, really work on myself and to better myself in different ways. And, I mean, I guess that could be my recovery, too. but, yeah, like, I have so much time for myself right now, and I get these opportunities to, like, you know, work on my health and work on my spirituality. And I've been isolating a little bit, but trying to go to more meetings. I need to be sponsoring, which I'm never good at, but I would love to do. I mean, as far as, like, getting the sponsees, I feel like I'm fairly antisocial with newcomers, but I guess this is God being, like, be social with people or something. Yeah, this program's given me kind of everything. I don't think... You know, as I get older, I'm like, I probably might, if I was alive, probably would be where I am today if I was still out there, maybe. But another part of me, like, especially when I was a couple years younger, I was like, I wouldn't be here if I wasn't sober. Because at the pace I was going, I could easily be like, well, what if I was young? Like, and I do think about that a lot. Like, what if I was just young? And then... You know, there's a total possibility it could have just been that I was young. But all the good things I have today, I don't, like, fully trust myself to think that I could actually go out there and take a drink without possibly losing everything. And it's just not worth it. And, like, I've gained not only sobriety, but, like, I love myself now, and I feel like I'm a good person now, and I feel like I can stand and be a positive member of society now, and I know I wasn't those things before. I really hated myself before, and it's really is a miracle that I could have gained all this from working the steps and being around all these people. And there's just so much positivity and so much love in these rooms. And I have friendships that are worth so much to me now because they're based on more than drugs and alcohol. I think I have one normal friend. I burn all my bridges, and I really, like... That's really what, and I can say it was on my end. That's really what my friendships were based on. I just wanted your drugs and alcohol. Sorry. I didn't care about anybody. Like, I cared about certain people. Like, yeah, you're my friend. Like, you're my boyfriend, whatever. But, like, truth be told, cheated on my boyfriend. Would fuck over my friends if I could to get what I want. And it's horrible saying that, and I don't really say it lightly. But I am able to make these really crazy, sometimes overwhelmingly conscious decisions now. And know that I'm doing right by them. Because I don't always follow that instinct that I feel is, you know, my higher power or whatever. Because I feel like my instincts are right at this point in my recovery. Do I always follow those instincts? No. But I feel like I have the knowledge. I'm not saying I know everything. But I feel like I have the ability to make the right decision. And... that's huge. And I think I was just telling my friend, do I follow those instincts always? No. But I think that just in that I know what could be the right thing, and I know that if I do something, it may cause consequences, that that's a lot of growth, because I can walk myself into these situations and kind of tell myself I told you so, which sucks, but whatever. What are you going to do? But, you know, today's, it's a day at a time still. Like, people can have years and years of sobriety, and I think that, it still just comes back today, because every once in a while I still feel like drinking. But, you know what, like, so I call a friend, I call my sponsor, I call, you know, I go to a meeting. I have so many tools. I pray. Don't really meditate, but there's a learning curve to this. but it's just like the most amazing thing that's ever happened to me, and I'm really grateful to be here, and yes, I'm grateful that I got asked to speak, so thanks.
Now it's our main speaker, Bucky.
Hey guys, Bucky Alcoholic. Those of you who've seen me share before, or those of you who haven't, actually, I'm not really big with linear stuff. So this will be more my experience, straight swirl. I get distracted a lot and go in circles, and you know, it always sounds like I'm coming to a point, but I don't really. Then I just don't have time. So I'm just going to start. The last woman I dated was normal. It was weird. And she lived in Pacifica, and she's grown up there, and everybody in Pacifica kind of knows each other. It's all real kind of small town kind of vibe. She took me to this wedding, and I mean, I was just real fucking uncomfortable there. You know, just, I didn't know anybody, I didn't know how to talk to people, and people were trying, I didn't know how much I could say to them. I don't know, I just, like they say, I was just really feeling, I was thinking maybe I could kill time and go out and say something. I left something in the car. You know what I mean? Maybe I could get out of here just for a little bit, just for a break. You know what I mean? It was just like, it didn't feel right. Like, nothing seemed to make sense. I didn't know if I was supposed to, where I was supposed to sit, where I was supposed to walk. I just felt like it was in everybody's way. And then one of the servers, put this basket of bread, the big cloth napkins in it, too close to one of the little candle settings, and it caught fire. And everybody just started freaking out. And they started trying to, like, someone tried to pat it out with another napkin, caught it on fire. You know what I mean? And it was kind of down the table from it. I kept seeing him just freak out. He couldn't put this thing out. And I stood up and said, "Give me the fire!" And I grabbed it away from them, and I put water, put it out, and everybody was like, "Yeah!" And I was just like, you know, but it was this moment where when the thing caught on fire, I knew what to do. You know what I mean? I was fine then. Shit's on fire. I'm okay. Everyone else goes like, shit. This is when I'm comfortable, right? This is when it's good for me. This is when I like being around. I know my place. You know what I mean? And that's the thing I think about is, you know, is that we don't need a whole lot of us in society, you know, but we need, you know, we're here for a reason, and it's good that everyone, you need one of these guys at every wedding that can just put out the fire when everyone freaks out, you know. It's a normies world that we're living in, you know what I mean? Like, we need most other things to, like, you know, we wouldn't be good at, like, you know, keeping, like, you know, the public utilities on, or we need people to work at H&R Block and all these kinds of things. We don't need us working at the bank either. You know what I mean? But God damn it, we keeps this place interesting, and I kind of like that. Try to have bands and poets and musicians and whatever without without us, and then shit gets real dull. I was just really, that one incident really brought in this thing in me, and just, like, it reminded me of, like, when I first started, you know, and I'm not going to go into what my crappy childhood was, because it's, doesn't matter what, I don't want to make it sound like it was different from your crappy childhood or whatever, but the details don't matter. But our solution was the same. The solution to our problems was the same. When I drink, I feel better. All this other shit goes away. Right? And it doesn't matter if my trauma matches yours or whatever. It's just that we all came to the same point of, like, when I drink this, that shit doesn't matter. And that's when I'm like everyone else. This is where I fit in. This is my place. You know, there's a Twilight Zone episode called Button. It's based on a Richard Matheson story. And basically this guy shows up at this couple's house and brings him this box with a button on it. And says, if you press this, we'll give you $200,000. And someone you don't know is going to die. What do you do? You know, and it's, whatever, that's all kind of important that they, you go watch that. I think it's on Netflix. You can go watch that. Some of you on your phones right now looking it up. But it kind of, like, alcohol was kind of like that. It was on this magic button. Right, just push it. You push this button, you're going to feel better, all your problems are going to go away. But you're going to add, like, a little bit of emotional damage. You're going to add a little bit of social trauma. You're going to add all these things. You're going to fuck up your life a tiny bit. You know, by then I was already just, like, jamming the button as many times as I could. Like, I don't care. Like, what, it's going to get worse than this? Come on. You know. I pushed that button until it broke. I mean, what else was I going to do? I mean, that makes sense. You give any kid who's in kind of a world of chaos this option, that's just what's going to happen. And that's what I did. I just pushed it. Until one day I was an old guy in the punk house. I don't know if you guys know punks, but that's not the cool dude. That's the one everybody's like, what's wrong with him, kind of thing. But I was like 31 or something, and that was like, that's really old in punk years. That's like, that's a kind of like a fossil around places. But I remember I was 39th in MLK, I was lying on the floor and looking. We had a glass coffee table, and I could look up through the glass of the coffee table and see my Jim Beam there, and it was just that one little ring left in it, and I was like, man, I have to get more. Too bad I can't stand up. You know what I mean? And I was at that point where it's like I really wanted more. I was running out. It was that panic. But I was so fucked up I could not do anything but lie on the floor. And it hit me. That's when it was like, how dare you? How dare you? I've broken the button. How dare you stop working? How dare you? Why do I still feel shitty? I can't physically get more alcohol to me. I can't even, like, sit up to grab more. And it's not enough. And that was a horrible, lonely feeling. You know, it's that loneliness, that thing of this betrayal. Like, you know, this was my friend who said he was always going to be there, who was always going to make me feel better, and he didn't. And that was the horrible, real bottom moment. My plan until then had always been, like, I'm going to stay a little bit drunk all the time. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, a classic morning drinker. You know, I thought having a Jim Beam and Coke in the morning, well, I thought that was great. I had that. It was a great way to start the day. I even kept a cocktail by the bed in case I woke up at night. I could drink a little there. Like, I was going to make this work. I was going to make this, like, where I could be just a little bit drunk all day. And, you know, I drank it. I lost my first job for drinking when I was 19. from a Subway sandwich place, and I was just like, I just thought it was cool, you know what I mean? Like, they fired me because I was drinking, you know. And I ended up moving out in San Francisco, and I had a job at a new stand on Haight Street, right, Haight and Ashbury. And I drank there, was 20 years old, just, you know, kind of openly drinking at work. And because it's Haight Street, you kind of get away with it. And, it was that kind of thing where, like, if I lost a job, I just got another one. If someone broke up with me because I was drinking too, I'd get another girlfriend. Like, if my roommates kicked me out because I was too much of it, I'd get a new place to live. I was always like, why is this a problem? You know, I lost a place, but I have another one now. I only need one apartment, right? And I would kind of burn this. They didn't really understand. I had this kind of weight of damage behind me because, you know, sometimes I would lose a job and then I would get a better one. So, ergo, my drinking at work was a good idea, right? Because I lost the crappy job and got a better job. So this was a good idea. I just had that weird thinking and that weird philosophy behind everything. And it just kept going until, like, it was kind of the last years in the punk house. I couldn't get another job. And I alienated a lot of my friends. I wasn't really talking to my family. And, I moved out, and 2 weeks later, my roommate died. And I felt really bad. I felt really guilty. I was like, if I had moved out, maybe I would have gone to check on her. And it was she got basically a strep throat. She got strep throat, and it turned into a staph infection, and she died. And it was just really dumb. It was a dumb thing that happens in a punk house. You know, she was like 30 years old, and because she got mad at me when I moved out. She's like, now you're making me the old person here. And we had this thing of like, okay, let's all, like, I put together, like, I moved out, I put together a couple weeks sober, and I talked with all the roommates and stuff as we're going to her service, and I said, let's all just show up sober at her services, you know, let's not, you know, and I get there, and everybody starts coming in, and I can see in their eyes, everybody's loaded, and then that's what kind of hit me. It's like, I'm not, like, any of these things I thought I was. I'm not, like, I'm trying to have a writing career and stuff, and it's like, I'm not, you know, I kind of thought of myself as like, oh, I'm just this misunderstood poet type, and I'm not like a misunderstood poet, I'm not like a literary genius, I'm not, you know, whatever, I'm a drunk, and my roommates, they're not like band members, they're not like, you know, they're not activists or like, you know, whatever, like, they're not like, whatever, they're all junkies. You know, and it's all these things that we pretended that we were. That's when I really saw it. That's when I really kind of came to this idea of not only, because I knew drinking didn't work for me anymore, but I didn't really still see myself as an alcoholic. Like, the day after that was when I went to, I did get loaded that night. I was like, just in a real fuck it mode, and I got loaded that night. And then the next day, I started going to meetings. I called an old bartender who'd offered to take me to meetings before. The bartenders knew. I told one of the bartenders at the Kilowatt. I said, I think about stopping drinking. He goes, good idea. The Kilowatt's not a fancy place. He said, sometimes we feel guilty serving you. Through our conversation, I realized I was the worst drunk in the Kilowatt. Wow. You know, I'm the guy people would look at me, I'm like, I'm not that guy. You know, I'm like, well, that's a really bad sign. You know, I don't know. So the bartender, like the other the bartender, he told the other bartender, because he knew she was in program, and she called me and said, let's go to a meeting. I'm like, no, and then, but I kept her number, and then I called her again the next day, and then she took me, and I remember her taking me to a meeting and then saying, like, what, She told me she'd been sober something like 15 years, which is just like, ugh, that just seemed like forever. And I said, what about all those times we drank? She's like, no, that was just you. Hey, that's kind of day of how, like, oblivious I was to everyone else. You know, I used to go to a bar and I thought we were drinking together. I really did. And I never actually seen her take a drink. I just assumed that people were drinking as much as me. So, I did that, and, you know, I went to a speaker discussion meeting, and it was a really good story. I liked it, and I thought the stories were cool. And I thought, okay, well, you know, I'll give it 6 months. You know, if I can stop drinking for 6 months, then that would be enough time for everything to reset. Just get over this hump, and then whatever. I want to say drinking like a gentleman, because I never enjoyed that. I never enjoyed it, not from the first day. I was always like, let's drink like a biker. That was the thing. Like, I was drinking, I'm going to drink until shit feels better. Not, I want to have a drink or two and then go home. I'm going to drink until that shit I remember, I don't fucking think about. So I was like, I need to get back to that place. Maybe if I quit drinking for 6 months, alcohol will work again. That was still my idea about going. And I noticed in that 6 months, there was no one, like, I didn't get into any fights. There was no one mad at me. No one came to my house at 2 a.m. looking for me. All these kinds of things just kind of went away. And I was like, wow, did I really bring all that shit on myself? Really? Is this all, like, is this related? Because I would like to have this life. I was devoid of all this bad drama I was bringing on myself. And I was like, maybe there's something to this. I think the second, you know, the second meeting I went to was at High Noon. And just very appropriate for a second meeting. It was at 19th and Dolores. I was just going there. I was working again. I'd found a job. I was working again, but my boss let me off. I was, because he understood. That, you know, I needed a little bit of extra time for lunch because I had to walk to 19th and Dolores, go to a meeting and walk back. So he was like, cool, just clock out, and then however long you need to be gone, and then come back. And it was really cool, and I was like, I walked in there, and, you know, there's all these seats up front, and I'm like, I'm going to sit up here, and there was keys in all the seats. And I was like, what is this? You know, and someone saved all the seats from kindergarten, and I got mad. And I noticed like there was a Mercedes key ring, BMW key ring, and I'm like, fuck these guys. Why are they here? They got money. What kind of problems do they have? I didn't get it. I was like, so wrapped up in that thing of like, these people couldn't have any problems. They still have money. They have these nice cars. You know, I just like judge people. I still don't know who those people were. But I was I'm judging these people's like the moral character off the fucking kind of car they drive. And that's where I was at. And, you know, just still like, I went in the back and all these guys I knew started coming in the meeting, and I just known them, and it was like, God, I was looking around, and it's like, oh, I know this guy from the 500 Club, this guy from the Uptown, and this guy from the Million, and this guy from the Tip Top, and this guy from the Sacrifice, and I was like, oh shit, it's like all the bars have like sent a delegate. There was this thing in high school called Model UN, and it reminded me of that, except for it was like for fuck-ups. It was just like there was somebody that sent a thing like to all the bars, like, send your worst fuck-up over here at noon at 19th floors, and we're all going to hang out. I was kind of like, it was very calming in this way. It's very... it was very reassuring because, you know, I was always in this mode of like, God, I drink with all these other guys. Why didn't their lives fuck up? Why didn't they ruin everything? Why didn't they have a fucking damage idea? What's wrong with me that like all this shit happens to me and not anyone else? You know, sound familiar? Fucking, why does shit happen to me and not anyone else? Really just still judging everyone else's. I've come to learn that a lot of people have problems too. But at the time, it felt like, why am I the only one with problems? And I walk in there and there's all these guys I haven't seen in forever. And there they are. And then guess what? It fucked up for them too. And something kind of went off there. I was still on my plan at the time. Like, you know, this is going to take 6 months and then I'll be back. But it was kind of what calmed me down about going to a lot of meetings. Even the ones I didn't really get along with. I found a home group. I still have it. It's a men's meeting. It's a crosstalk meeting. It's 7:30 on Tuesdays at the Maritime Hall. If you ever want to go, if you're late, we make you do 12 push-ups. You know, it's whatever. We have our own little rules, but I like it. It's made a world of difference for me. That's, I think, been the best thing about my sobriety is picking a home group and making sure it functions. Just that thing. I'm like, everything else can go to shit, but I'm going to make sure this thing works, right? And just kind of having that focus is like every Tuesday, I'm going to make sure that, you know, like that we have, that all the newcomers are spoken to, we have a secretary that we, you know, that I'm going to unlock the doors and I'm going to, you know, if we don't have it, it's a coffee guy flakes out, I'm going to make coffee, that kind of thing. It's just like, I'm going to make sure, like, no matter what, this meeting works. And, It's been really good. That's, I think, like, from there too, the other people who have picked it as a home group, we're all a small, very tight group. And I think this is kind of lost somewhere in AA a little bit. And, we're told to get a sponsor, we get a book, we work steps. Some people don't make enough friends in here, and I really strongly recommend you make some friends. It might take you a little while. I know we're not really that great at it, but you know, you'll figure it out. And like, this is good because, you know, we kind of bullshit our sponsors. I know we do. I hear it from my sponsees. I've done it where, you know, like, how you doing? Oh, good, everything's cool. But our friends, we don't really, not really able to bullshit them so much. You see through it a lot faster, you know. So get a couple people around you who are kind of tight, who know without having to ask you that you're fucked up, right? And that kind of can see it, and that's kind of kept me accountable with a lot of these people. I think that's been a very big part of my process. You know, sometimes you just want to. You know, just because, you know, if you go on a bad date, you just want to call some of your friends and talk about it. You don't really want to have to do another sexual inventory. Keep your sponsors with a step word, and you know, you got your friends there to help you out just for your general bitching and complaining. And it's good. It took me a while to get to that. I was dating someone. I had about 3 years, and I was dating someone. And one night, she said, "You know, every night that we're not out, I'm either doing coke or drinking." I'm like, "Oh shit!" And she's like, "I want to go. You know, it's really great when we hang out because I don't have to do all of that." And I was like, "You never have to do it." She's like, "Yeah, I know. Would you take me to a meeting?" I'm like, "Sure." Within a couple months, everyone was talking. Everybody knew her. I was already. My name was, you know, my name was Christy's boyfriend. And just about, like, you know, in a couple months, and I've been here for years, and I was like, and I told her, I was like, kind of confident thing about it. I was like, why does everyone know you already? Why does everyone talk to you? People don't talk to me, and they don't even know. And I've been here, and she's like, do you talk to them? I'm like, whoa, And she told me real fast. She just said, "Just say, do you ever talk to people at the meeting?" I'm like, "I don't. I kind of feel." And she got me there, you know. And that was the kind of one of those things. It's like I tell one of the things I do with my sponsees kind of early on. You know, is that I say, "Hey, every time you go to a meeting, you say hi to one person you haven't said hi to before, and you just get their name and whatever. You don't have to do anything else." Just meet one new person at every meeting. Just say, and you'd be surprised how much resistance I get off that. But really, this guy, God, he just killed me. A couple months ago, he called me up and says, "Hey, just saying hi to stuff people really works." And I was like, "Yeah, it does." You know, I was just really shocked at this idea that, like, you know, if you just be nice to people, be nice back. I mean, we're not so, but you know, just getting that group of friends, I think, has been really, really key for me. As far as the rest of my life, you know, I did a lot of these things where I did an inventory list of came up with my inventory list. I had resentments against a lot of people who had done things that I had wanted to do. And, like, you know, like people with college degrees, fuck them. Like, that was kind of my attitude. Why this? Because I dropped out. That's what it was. I dropped out of college, so fuck everybody who stayed. You know? And I saw this was a continuing thing. All the things I quit in life, I hated everyone who didn't quit. And so I was like, all right, what can I do? I made a separate inventory list of things I had quit and why. And it was a lot of times it was like college was too hard. Well, it's not as hard when, you know, it's harder when you show up drunk to class. You know what I mean? When you're drinking during class, maybe you're not going to do that well. So I did all these things, like, you know, I went back to school and I got my degree at like 35, and you know, I'm in there in SF State and thinking, you know, why was this so hard the first time? And then a kid walked into this class late and put his head down on the desk and passed out and was like, "Yeah, that's why." Okay. Gotcha. Well, the degree led me to be qualified to do more things. You know, I applied to a lot of jobs, and I was really scared. I got called for an interview, and this is the most frightening thing I've done sober. You know, let's go to a job interview, and this is that kind of relates what I was saying before about the fire thing. It's like we have our fear sensors are installed backwards in our brains. You know how frightened people would be, like regular people, they'd be, how mortified they'd be if you said, if you asked them to like score drugs from a stranger. You know what I mean? Like, they'd be like, no, I mean, what, are you going to kill me? Like, you know. They'd be afraid to do these things. They've never, like, I worked as a doorman and a bouncer or some year, and, you know, I was really good at breaking up fights. And, I mean, it's just, like, other people would be afraid to do this job. You know what I mean? It's like, this was, I felt comfortable in this shit. And it was the thing, it's like, everything that should be frightening, you know, like, you know, getting in the car with someone who's noticeably drunk and driving. You know, things like that. We just didn't think about that shit. But it's a lot of the normal shit is terrifying. You know, like, just going to the dentist, holy shit, like, you know what I mean? It's like, we, like, whatever, like, I was afraid, like, why was I afraid of this job interview? Because he was going to call me down there, and we were going to talk about my resume and my experience, and I was going to have to be honest with him. Holy shit, there it is. That's what I figured out. I was terrified of being honest. And, like, really, if he had asked me to come down there and fight the other applicants. Right? Like, Battle for Gaza. Last applicant standing gets the job. I'm like, let's go. Like, I wasn't even ready. I'm just eating it. It's dumb. It's so goddamn dumb. And it's still, like, where our heads are at a lot of times. You know? And it's just that fucking honesty is just so daunting. A couple months ago, I fucking had to go to the funeral service for a former sponsee who was 29 years old. He took his own life. He never would make it past the fourth step. I could not get him. He would come back in, he would go out, come back in. He'd go out, fuck some things up, he'd come back, we would work with him a little bit, and then, you know, he would get to this point where he's like, I'm good, I got this. You know, and then he would leave because he started feeling better, and then he'd quit going to meetings, and he would never, and I was like, what is it, you know, what is it about this fourth step that you can't do? Why is this thing? So it's like, I just don't want to tell you what's on there. And it's just like, he just couldn't bring it up with that honesty, you know? It's like that weird thing. The number one problem I've seen with working with men in AA, just sponsoring them and getting to know them and stuff, the number one problem that we all have is our reluctance to ask for help. And I think the number two problem is not wanting to show any vulnerability, not wanting to be afraid of looking weak. I've seen guys in all messed up situations. You know, like they're in residential facilities, fresh out of the penitentiary and stuff. And they're like, "Oh, I got this. I'm fine." Like, no, you fucked up a lot. It's okay. It's all right. It's all right to be fucking. And we can help you. You know, and it's just, but we just don't want to do it. We don't want to look like we don't know what we're doing. It was a problem I had with Ethan, and who passed, I went to a service out in Elk Grove, out there by Sacramento, his family it was weird because I only knew his family from the aborted four steps that I have participated in. I had seen these, I only knew who they were. I couldn't say that Ethan told me so much about you, because all I ever heard was Ethan told me what he resented about you. I didn't know what to tell him, and it was really awkward. It was really awkward and really sad and unnecessary. And right about that time as well, a friend of mine who's a nurse sent me this thing. It was an article in Salon. This guy was trashing AA, and he was some kind of psychiatrist or something, some kind of mental health worker, and he was saying that, it's all bullshit, and I cured a guy, kind of thing. Like, I worked with him for 8 months, and now he's cured of alcoholism, and just because the article was about the low success rate in AA, and I was like, well, she's like, what do you think about the success rate thing? I'm like, what are you talking about, the success rate, how do you figure that? And that's kind of always this gray area, because, like, to me, let's look at the people who complete all 12 steps and how many of them have positive results. You know, not people who, like, do three and then leave. You know, and it's because that's not AA. It's a guy got to do all of it. Just, I'm going to ask you to do 12 things. Can you do them? If you do three and quit, I can't help you. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's it's always stuck with me. This thing of this horrible thing, people saying it doesn't work. So did you try all 12 steps? Did you work with someone all the way through? Or did you quit when it was a little uncomfortable or difficult or whatever? Because it is not comfortable. There's, for us, it's an unnatural act. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not normal for us. This is like I think, I have like three emotional gears, right? That's, fuck you, poor me, and where's mine? Those are the three things. Those are the three things that I kind of fluctuate a lot between. When I have a thought that begins with one of those things, I know whatever follows it is a bad idea. Right? Mostly it's fuck you. I've got a lot of that in me. I'll be honest about that. And it's a lot of, I'm big on the fuck you. That's what comes natural. That's the natural way I deal with the world. Working the steps, you have to leave that behind. And you have to think a different way. Did more like, what have I done? What are my actions doing for other people? Like, what's my part in this? That was a big deal. What's my part is a huge thing for me. Do I go right to 9? What do I do? Do I?
5. You've got 3 minutes.
All right, cool. Jesus. I will try to wrap this up somehow. I'm gonna go with this. Fuck. One of the things I've noticed, I've got 12 years now, which is just kind of bizarre to me. I remember one of my first meetings, I heard a guy say he had 7 years. I'm like, why is he even here? What are you showing off? I was still like kind of shaky and weird. Like I just like, you know, I just sit in the back of a lot of meetings and cry a bunch of times. I was that dude, you know. And no one wants to see a big guy cry. No one fucking likes that. You know, like, you know. But I did. I wasn't holding it together very well. And I've seen the guys a long time. I'm like, what are they doing in here? Like, but I see a lot of people. There's somewhere in there, and it's not so many in the years thing, but I think it's right around 7-8 years. There's this kind of like this what now moment. And if some people get it sooner. That's when I got mine, I think. That's after like I got sober, did all the steps, and went to school, got my degree, and I was like, what now? And but I think a lot of other people, you get to this point in your sobriety, and you're kind of, well, what do I do now? I've done all the steps. I've had sponsees, and I, you know, whatever. I'm doing all these things. And there's this, almost this weird thing of like, I'm going to relapse so I can start over. I've seen that. I've also seen the relapse come off things being really good. No one wants to look dumb and go out when something bad happens. You know, oh, someone broke up with me, now I'm like going to drink. No one wants to be that person. You know, no one wants to drink because they got fired or whatever. But I've seen a lot of people drink when... you know, when they got a bunch of time, and then they're like, oh, well, I'm at my brother's wedding, you know, I can't drink with my brother, man, what the fuck is this, and everything's going good, I put everything under control, I got it, it's like, you hear this a lot, I got this, a very scary thing, and when you hear that, I just want to reach out whenever I hear someone say that, and be like, no, you don't, but it's, the thing in the what now, I think it's, you should find something that you wanted to do. I do ask my sponsees also in their inventory to make a list of times that they were happy to be themselves outside of drugs and sex. And, it's kind of frightening how few things people put down. Mm. And they have to think about it. When's the last time I enjoyed being myself? Shit, I don't know. And like, but we find these. I put some things on there, and I realized, okay, here's some things I need in my life. You know, and I do a lot of public performance. I've written some books, and I compete in this weird weightlifting, this Russian weightlifting sport. And there's all these things I wanted to do, and I'm doing them, and that's kind of like the gifts of sobriety, right? Because these are things that I used to look at and be like, boy, it'd be great to do that. It'd be real nice to do this. Like, you know what I mean? It's like I would be drunk at the bar going, you know, it'd be really great to write some books. And not thinking like, yeah, you can go home and write it. If you stop drinking now, maybe you go home and fucking turn on the computer on and start typing. And that's kind of what I kind of went back, and I've kind of been chasing all these goals I had before I started drinking, and now I'm doing a bunch of them to varying degrees of success. I don't even really care that I'm not good at some of them. It just that, like, you know, I'm doing them, and it's kind of great. I guess that's it. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.